Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout, but there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck!
I only got one thing to say to you. Strike this mother out.
2-2. He got a perfect game. Everyone done by the King.
Hey, you. How you like them apples?
Took away a game-tying home run for Manny Ramirez.
That's my thing, fellas.
We will see you tomorrow night.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for visiting us this evening.
That was his 31st pitch. I don't know why you're going Reed Garrett for 30 bullets.
It seems like at that point, they're seeing him as the almost mop-up guy, where it's like if we get lucky enough to be in a blowout, which conveniently every game in this series has been a blowout.
True.
You know, we can use him.
Throw it to him.
As long as we can, and then maybe kick it to someone whose name is not Edwin Diaz and finish the game off and, you know, be well rested for Los Angeles. Yeah. This is the Mudville Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Nolan Ray.
I am another one of your hosts, Brody Stout.
Brody, do you remember when you were a kid how much the day after Christmas sucked?
Actually, we had a tradition on the day after Christmas, but why didn't you like the day after Christmas?
Well, it was just like the hype had died down, you know, the mystery of what was under the tree is no longer there. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking more about when I was a kid, you know, just the hype around Christmas, the day after, and you know, when you realize that there are 364 days until next Christmas. So it's like never longer on the calendar, which when you're like 8 years old, that's the worst thing in the world, being as
it's
far
forever.
Away from Christmas as you can get.
Ugh.
The day after your birthday, too. It was a very, very similar sensation. But it turns out the day after Big Christmas sucks even worse.
Jesus. I had no idea where you were going with that. I thought you were going to say, like, for the beginning, you know, like the day after, like the Mets are prolonging their last day of the season, you know, like something like that. But that, you just fuck, ow, man. That was, like, brutal.
We're going to get into both championship series, Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Guardians. Looking like Dodgers, Mets heading to game six, even though Andy Páez did just hit a 3-run home run at the time of recording. So that game's not over yet when you have Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts in your lineup, not to mention the rest of their dangerous crew. Last night, New York Yankees on the verge of going up 3-0 in Cleveland, as close to a World Series title as you can get. Luke Weaver throws potentially the worst pitch in 20 years to be thrown into a postseason game to Big Christmas John Kenzie Noel, and gets jonk bonked to tie the game in the bottom of the ninth. David Fry walks it off. Demoralizing loss for the Yankees after Aaron Judge ties the game off of Emmanuel Clase. Giancarlo Stanton goes back to back to give him the lead. Get an insurance run in the ninth, only to watch the closer, who had been dominant up to that point, throw really what was, considering the spot, I think one of the more inexplicable pitches I've ever seen.
Well, don't forget, he did give up a homer to J-Ram in game two. Does make you question why even bring him in that 4-run lead when he did give up that homer. You expose him, you show him to the Guardians, and then it doesn't look good after. Like, it's easy to second guess and be like, hey, maybe don't throw your closer who, like, is somehow skating by on pixie dust in a 4-run lead here. You have other options, because now you've used him and he got really rocked, and now what do you do if you need to go to him again? Like, I mean, obviously you go back to him until, I guess, you get one more shot. If he messes up again, then he's out. It's not good. It's not a good thing to do. It's not a good problem to have. It's not fun. It reflects poorly on the decision to bring him into a game that you hope should be out of reach with the rest of your bullpen. 4 runs is a lot in the playoffs. So, I don't know. It's tough to second guess. Rough game. Very entertaining game, but rough loss.
It's interesting that the ending of that game was such a back and forth and so electric, really, for both teams, because the first 7 innings were pretty unwatchable, at least if you're a Yankees fan like we are, just watching the lineup go up and down time after time.
We've seen that base game 80 times this season.
Aaron Judge hitting that home run off of Class A is one of the biggest reliefs I can remember feeling in a postseason. Like, that hit, I think, potentially could turn the narrative around for his postseason career. I mean, certainly had it not gone to waste in extra innings, you know, we would be talking a lot differently about it right now. I say it just to mention that, you know, good things on the docket from both teams in this game, even though that is not the way that I felt at all this afternoon when reminiscing right on the 1-0 changeup Luke Weaver threw to John Kenzie Noel.
Right.
That pitch has the potential to haunt me for a very long time. Why don't we just get into, as a whole right now, how are you feeling about both of these series? We'll start with Dodgers-Mets, but then go into Yankees-Guardians.
Yeah, the Dodgers-Mets series is in a very interesting spot, literally as we speak, because it is 10-5. It's a fifth inning, 10-5 lead for the Mets, 3-1 up Dodgers, right? So here's the thing. Jack Flaherty looked like garbage tonight, right? Like, the Mets absolutely rocked him. And Dave Roberts leaves him in for way too long. And the Dodgers, the narrative around them for the last few weeks was that they don't have enough pitching. It's why we both agreed that the Padres were going to beat them in the DS. Going forward, I don't believe they have a starter scheduled for tomorrow, from their rotation. I think they're going to have to go opener. And then I think they end up having to go bullpen day for a possible game 7. They probably won't. I'm sure they will show or throw someone on short rest. That doesn't bode well either. So the thing is, I still think the Dodgers are going to win this series. However, the Mets, if they win today, and by getting to their bullpen and by really tiring out that Dodgers bullpen in general, could make this a very interesting series going forward, because a game 6 and a game 7 with a shorthanded Dodgers pitching staff that's already kind of weak, all of a sudden a very potent Mets lineup coming off a double-digit run performance in game 5, an emotional win, if this holds out, it's the bottom of the fifth again as we speak. All of a sudden, if the Mets win this game, I honestly, if you're a Dodgers fan, I'd be on the edge of my seat for game 6 and 7.
You don't think home field advantage is going to make a difference in that?
Look, it's like very hard for the Mets to go out to LA and win. That being said, though, they proved that they can win on the road. So I worry about the Dodgers pitching. That's all. And the Mets don't have a lot either. But I don't know. At least they would probably have, what, Manaea and I guess Severino for game 7.
I think that's what it would be, is Manaea, Severino.
You don't feel great about that for 6. You don't feel great about that for 7. But you do feel good about that for 6, because Manaea's been absolute nails. The other day wasn't Severino's fault either. It was the fact that they wore black jerseys and the bullpen gave it up anyway. It's interesting at the very least, and that's kind of all you can ask for, because the Mets were about to just go out with a little whimper, and now they have the chance to either go out with a bang by winning today and making game 6 interesting, or at the very least the end of this game, if they somehow blow it and the Dodgers win, will be a ridiculous 9-run comeback minimum. So, you know, fun stuff either way.
Yeah, it's such a weird series because it feels like a very competitive matchup even to this point. Like, you know, both teams still have a realistic shot to go home with it, but we haven't really seen too many innings of dramatic or competitive baseball at all in the series. Like, every single game has been a blowout, and that's not great. There hasn't been much suspense there at all. But do you want to just get into kind of a game-by-game recap here for Dodgers-Mets?
I mean, yeah, sure. Here, game 1 was all Dodgers. Yeah. Game 2 was all Mets. Game 3 was all Dodgers. Game 4 was all Dodgers. Game 5 has been all Mets.
Basically, that like sums it all up. Game 1, Dodger blowout. Mookie Betts has 3 RBIs. Jack Flaherty shoves. Game 2, Mets go up 6-0 like immediately. Bullpen game goes horribly wrong for the Dodgers. Mark Vientos hits a 3-run home run in the second inning, and right out the gate, it's non-competitive again. Dodgers do get a few runs, Max Muncy homers, but it's a 7-3 loss. And then, yeah, like you said, games 3 and 4, Dodger blowouts in Citi Field. Ohtani hits a baseball.
Shohei leadoff homer was cool.
Yeah, Ohtani hits a baseball to Poland. Walker Buehler's effective.
Benassi.
Over 4 innings, which is really big to see for them. I mean, I feel like if the Dodgers are going to find success on the mound, at least starting games, Walker Buehler is an absolute necessity for them, because they're starting Ryan Brazier in a series that includes him in the rotation. So were he to become ineffective, you know, not a very clear way out of that. He's held up thus far. He was great in that game. Kike Hernandez hit a home run. Muncy again, great series for Max Muncy. And then, yeah, game 4, 10-2. Quintana destroyed. Yamamoto pitching pretty well, pulled pretty early again. I did read the box score too fast here when I was looking at it and thought that Kike Hernandez pitched two innings to close this out. That was not the case. It was a man named Edgardo Henriquez, notably not Enrique Hernandez, which would have been a lot cooler had they just said, you know what, we're up so much, we're going to throw our utility infielder to close out this game. But no, shout out to Edgardo for two scoreless innings. That's very good to see for anybody. Not a pitcher I was too familiar with, but on the postseason roster, so clearly that one's on me. And then, yeah, game five happening right now. You know, we're getting it live, 10-6. Mets are up. Seems like a lead that they would be able to hold, but stranger things have happened. So
their bullpen is not that great.
Anything else you want to say about that? I mean, it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot to discuss on a game-by-game basis.
Not really. I'm impressed with Francisco Alvarez's ability to turn around. He's looked great so far in game five. He's looked absolutely terrible in the earlier games. I think he had, they said earlier, I think he got on for five straight at-bats after looking terrible for a while. I will say, the thing that I've been watching this series the most for, being the fact that I'm a Yankees fan, has been how I think that the Yankees will match up with either of these teams should they get past Cleveland. I gotta say, I'm very scared of both of them in the World Series.
I could not agree more, but I'm going to let you continue.
These teams both have very good offenses. The Yankees, we know, don't hit, like, at all. They're capable of hitting. We've seen them hit, like, here and there, but they don't hit. And these are two teams who really hit. Now, the Yankees pitch, but we saw yesterday, pitching in the postseason, and we talked about it last week ad nauseum, pitching in the postseason is not the same thing as what happens in the regular season with a very good bullpen. Pitching in the postseason is extremely unpredictable. Offense, not so much. I think if you're a good offensive team, I think that carries over really well. Like, the Dodgers are just, like, a terrifying lineup. The Mets had been hitting very well for the last, like, 2.5 months of the season. People always say that you can't have too much pitching in the playoffs, but I think that's only if you have a good offense, because people watched the early 2000s Yankees teams blow it year after year with, like, an incredible offense because they had no pitching. I feel like this is a different era where if you can hit, you're going to go really far. Like, pitching is good to have, but it's not reliable. I think you just have to be able to hit, and these teams both really hit and have shaky bullpens, and it's working for both of them. So,
yeah, I feel the same way, that whoever comes out of the National League is definitely going to be the favorite heading into the World Series, whether they're facing the Yankees or if Cleveland finds a way to come back and win the series, which I do think is a little bit more likely than some people might expect right now.
I don't think it's impossible. We can get into that.
Yeah, we will. I think that watching the Dodgers and watching the Mets in the postseason, I mean, first of all, the fact that the Dodgers have three superstars at the top of their lineup who have been producing thus far in the playoffs. You know, Mookie Betts got off to a little bit of a slow start. He's certainly turned it on over the past few games. Shohei Ohtani, interesting splits with doing nothing when he comes up without anybody on base and then just being Barry Bonds when he has runners on base. First of all, with that, like, maybe you move Mookie up to one and then put Shohei at two. Try that out. Who knows?
Yeah, totally. You have that stat and you're going to leave him as your leadoff man? That makes no sense.
The Mets, I think it really, like, depends on how high the bats have been when you run into them. You know, most of the season, of course, I would have been very confident going into, like, a 7-game series against the Mets. And I think that the catalyst that has changed that is Sean Manaea just altered his arm slot, started pitching like Chris Sale, and then he's like, oh, okay, that works. I'm just going to be Chris Sale now. And teams have not been able to hit him at all. Like, lefties have not been able to pick up the ball out of his hand. Like, you saw in the at-bats against Ohtani. Like, he looked ridiculous at the plate, and that's maybe the best hitter ever. So it's like, that is the kind of guy where it's like, if you go into the series with him as your three, and it's like, you know, you can probably expect like 3 to 4 innings and 3 runs, and like maybe he can keep you in the game, like just as a guy that you need to be able to get to a more dominant bullpen. Like, I think that's what he was for most of his career, like kind of going into this season. But the fact that that one seemingly simple change has turned him into one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball, like not only for this year, it like turns the Mets into a legitimate contender that I think can stack up against whoever comes out of the American League on both sides of the ball. Also, it makes me wonder if the Mets should sign him to a long-term deal this offseason, because if this is going to stick, I mean, holy shit.
I actually was talking to a Met fan friend of mine yesterday, and we were talking about the future of this team, because at the time, it looked like the Mets were going to whimper and die, and that was going to be it. He said Manaea was an instant, obvious re-sign, and I was a little surprised, because I feel like that should be a, like lower down on the priority list, but he was like, no, you bring him back. Like, they're smitten. So, you know. That you got to appreciate that from him. He's a little old, but I think you probably could get him like on a maybe like a 3 for $60 or something. Maybe a little bit more than that because he's a starting pitcher and people are going to be after him. If you give him like a 3 or 4 for $75 or $100 by like $25 a year, I would be surprised if he gets a lot more than that somewhere else. That feels like a easy deal for them.
Yeah, I mean, with their like financial situation, just the fact that they're paying so many players who are not currently on the team, there's an argument for like recency bias there, in that, you know, if you sign him and then he goes back to, you know, being like a decent like pitcher, like 3 or 4 in the rotation, like, you know, then you run out of like flexibility. But the Mets have shown that they have an owner who doesn't give a shit about flexibility, so like, what's the problem? Like, you can just continue doing whatever you want and paying however many million dollars over the luxury tax and saying, okay, whatever, we're gonna have all these players anyway, so, you know, deal with it.
And they're like, that's a thing you can do, the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, and that's why these two teams are here, and like, that's really good for players ultimately. It's like,
right,
you know, teams that sign star players to huge contract and like pad their roster with like veterans who deserve contracts and who are like willing to like go out and sign free agents, like ultimately that's very good for the game. So I think that the fact that Manaea has turned into an entirely new pitcher establishes the Mets as contenders on the level of like these other teams. Really, I still don't think that their rotation quite as strong as the Yankees, maybe, you know, assuming that Carlos Rodon can put in what we have seen from him in every inning except for the fourth and that start against Kansas City. You know, they don't have a Garrett Cole, but they do have a menacing lefty and a number of arms that can get you a couple of innings when you need them, and ultimately that is what you need to win in the playoffs right now. You know, we've talked about this very aggressive approach to pitching. It's how you shut down the other team's offense, and they haven't done a very good job of it tonight. But I mean, going into a series like, I think both the Yankees and Guardians, who have largely been pretty uninspiring on offense, would have to be pretty nervous about that.
This series is not over. We can only predict so much. Do you want to update your prediction for this series? Do we have predictions on these series?
We don't, no. I mean, but I think it's good to just, like, at this moment in time, how we're currently feeling compared to what actually happens. Like, it definitely feels to me like when you watch the Dodgers hit, and usually when you watch them pitch, not quite tonight when Jack Flaherty's fastball was down a few ticks and got destroyed, they just have that feeling of like, these are the champs. And I don't really feel that way about any other team, but especially either of the ones in the American League. I mean, at least compared to the Dodgers, like, they seem to be a pretty well-oiled machine. And like, even the fact that they've been using bullpen games that haven't worked and they've still like found a way to win, you know, those first two games in Yankees Guardian, they really were uninspiring. Like, I didn't think that the Yankees were the dominant team, particularly in either of those games, at least on offense. Like, I did like, for the most part, what the pitching looked like. Like, Carlos Rodon was great. You know, he's gonna pitch again tomorrow night with a huge start on the line. And then, yeah, game two, I mean, similarly, just not a ton of offense. Like, they won 6-3. Aaron Judge finally woke up in that game. It was really kind of the only exciting moment. So, I mean, good that that got off of his back in that game, and that, you know, they were largely able to win without a ton of stress or drama. And like I said last week, there's just such pressure on teams to go up 2-0 when you're playing at home, because your opponent is going to be pretty happy with a split. So the Yankees did a good job of keeping the Guardians down and winning those two games. You know, we got to talk about game three, you know, despite the fact that it's still going to haunt my dreams for a while.
Exactly. Well, I was going to say the thing about the Yankees that, you know, yeah, you bring it up that the first two games were uninspiring. That's the game they've been playing since the beginning of the Royal Series, and that's also the game that they've been playing since May. For some reason, they go through stretches in the regular season where they look like they are the best team, like, ever assembled, and then they will completely fall flat on their face. I know I just said this is the game they've been playing since May, but we don't usually see them play average baseball, and that is what they're doing right now. But at the same time, this is the game that they've been playing while losing in the regular season. They just somehow have not lost these games. And what the key has been the bullpen, because during the regular season, the problems that they had been having where they, you know, I think it was August where they were the worst team in baseball for like a month and a half or something, or like, you know, June or July into August. The problem was that they were sort of hitting and then the bullpen would fall apart. Right now, they are sort of hitting and then the bullpen had been saving them when they had been getting ahead and the starting pitching was good enough. And the thing that kind of scares Yankee fans about this team, as always, you know, with them, is that they don't hit in the playoffs. And right now they are not hitting outside of Stanton, really. And I mean, Judge, you know, that homer felt great, but he still had three terrible at-bats other than that. And they, to me, and I'm curious if you agree with me, I think the reason Yankee fans complain about this team all the time, like they constantly, you know, you have to get rid of Boone, it's Cashman's fault, you know, the players are all terrible, whatever, you know, all the things that we say all the time about this team, not us specifically, but pissed off Yankee fans. The reason, I think, is because they come off like they're more afraid to lose than like driven to win. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like that's why they don't come back on teams. I feel like they get in their own way. I feel like that's why they are very confident when they're up and they can usually hold a lead and they just win a game. It's why when they're down, like, they come across like they're terrified of losing. And I feel like maybe it's because the media here is very loud or whatever. And they also probably know that, you know, Boone's head is on the chopping block if they don't, you know, make it at least to the World Series, given the fact that all they had to get through was Cleveland and Kansas City. But they make for a stressful watch. Like, I had somebody text me yesterday, one of my cousins actually works for the Royals, so that was fun while we got to play each other in the DS. But he said, "You guys are so good. This team is unbelievable," after Judge and Stanton went back to back. And I responded, "Yeah, but they're bipolar as hell. So just like it's hard to say." And then I hate to say, like, I was proven to be right on that, because immediately the whole thing fell apart. It's just like they're extremely frustrating, and I think that they will get by this Cleveland team. But as we both were, you know, kind of hinting at, it's not impossible that this win last night sparks the Guardians and they end up coming back to win, you know, tonight. And then all of a sudden, 2-2. I mean, Rodon for game five, I don't hate. And then I really don't mind Cole for game six. So, or would it be Cole for game six? It would be Cole for game six. Yeah, it would. I'm not totally afraid of that. And I'm really not afraid of the Guardians' rotation. I am not scared of Class A anymore either. So, like, really, it's just, I don't know, I guess Eli Morgan worries me. Not really. But, you know, there's the Yankees series is in a weird spot. I think they win tonight being game four. And I think all of the freaking out that was caused by last night's ridiculous ending is going to be put to bed. But if the Guardians come out and do some more humbling, then I'm really going to start getting nervous.
I think the Yankee teams of years past, I mean, excluding 2021 and 23, just because those teams were so bad that they didn't even make it to the playoffs, they have been exposed largely by the Astros, but also by Tampa in 2020.
Go back to Boston. Well, you know,
the buzzsaw Red Sox in 2018. I mean, nothing you can do about that. That was just a super team. They have proven to not have the depth that they thought they had and that you need to have in the postseason. Like, as obvious as that sounds, I mean, like, we saw the difference in when, like, managers are aggressively attacking these hitters on the mound and, like, playing the matchups to the absolute best of their ability. Guys like Luke Voit, for example, were able to be exploited by that. Like, you know, just players from those, like, 2019, 2020 teams that I think have left a bad taste in mouths of Yankees fans for the current postseason. Like, even though this is a largely new roster, like, I don't think Aaron Judge is afraid to lose. I think he was in a slump. I think he hasn't been great in the postseason, again, largely because the Astros, who are so far ahead of everybody else, found a way to pitch to him, and they had a roster that was good enough to suppress his bat to the point where, when they played him as much as they did, his stats as a whole started to look pretty bad. But, you know, he wasn't helping that by not being able to hit Michael Wacha ever, and then, you know, having a bad first couple games against Kansas City that, you know, really just didn't help his narrative. I think he's largely been able to shake that off. I don't think Gerrit Cole is afraid to lose. Like, I think, like, that's a guy who I want to put the ball in his hands no matter what. I know he had a bad wild card start in Boston when he was hurt. I forget about that one, just to the fact that he has been, for the most part, so good every time that he has gotten the ball. Like, even when he didn't have stuff the other night, like, he was still very effective against Cleveland and able to get that win. I don't think Giancarlo Stanton is afraid to lose. I mean, that's a guy who has been a tank in the postseason. So, and I don't think Jazz Chisholm is afraid to lose. I mean, he's been pretty terrible, but like every time he goes, he says, you know, I'm not doubting for a second that the Yankees are going to win a championship. So it's like going into this game and starting about in about 30 minutes. Point being, I think that the core of this team is not afraid to lose. And ultimately, I think they have been surrounded by guys that have not been able to get it done. Where I will absolutely agree with you, and what I think your point is ultimately getting at, is that the new players, like the guys who have been brought in to win, have to play to the standard that would separate them from unsuccessful Yankee rosters of the past. You want to go out there with Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and Giancarlo and Gleyber Torres and Jazz and this whole lineup, and you want to be putting up like 7 runs or 8 runs in some games. Largely, they've played down to their competition. Like, both against Kansas City and Cleveland, we've been seeing these like 3-1, 3-2, 4-2 games going into the like 6th or 7th inning. Like, we've seen a lot of bullpen games. And largely, the Yankees' bullpen has been better than the other teams, partly because, I mean, they're just more talented than the Kansas City team. But Emmanuel Clase last night giving up those runs to Judge, I mean, let them back into a game that I had already written off to that point, just on the fact that we had seen so many games come down to the bullpens, and I felt like, you know, Clase has been pretty nails. Like, ultimately, like, the thing that would make me feel confident in this team is if they go out and they get off to a 5-0 lead, like, even once. Because we haven't seen that at all. We have not seen a dominant display. And hopefully the disaster of Game 3 can give them the kick in the ass they need to put Gavin Williams in early jeopardy tonight.
I think that's a very good point. And I also just want to kind of make an addendum to my afraid to lose point. It's not that they go into games afraid to lose or go into series afraid to lose. It's that once they start losing, I think they get nervous. And I feel like they just kind of fold. And it's because this is not a comeback team. Like, no. The Yankees have not been the Aaron Judge era New York Yankees do not come back on teams. Like, it's, and I'm not saying that's his fault. Let me just be clear. Or Aaron Boone's fault or whatever. It's just the way they are. Like, it's not, you know, it's not even necessarily like a really bad thing. It's just like they just don't, once they go down, they kind of, they're kind of a glass jaw team. Like, and I mean, that's not a death sentence when it comes to like winning in the playoffs, but it does make it a hell of a lot harder, and it makes it much more stressful because it means that comeback wins are rare. So I feel like because there's so much pressure and there's so many expectations from media and fans and whatever, and there's a legacy that you have to live up to. There's a lot that goes into being a Yankee and winning. I mean, you don't think that Judge is kind of afraid of being remembered like Mattingly instead of like Jeter? Like, honestly, like, think about it. Like, he's, you know, how many captains don't win World Series titles? There's really not many in the history of the Yankees. And he is the highest paid out of any of them. I mean, like,
well, of course.
I know that that's, you know, just the times. But, like, he's also arguably the most accomplished. Like, it's the one thing that he's missing, you know, so far at this point through his career. Statistically, not winning-wise. But just, like, it's, there's still a lot that hangs over them on a day-to-day basis. And then you couple that with the fact that they've had some brutal outs in the last few years. The sweep to Houston, the loss to Houston in 19, the loss to Houston in 17, the wild card exit in 18. Like, they've had some rough outs. And I think when you add all those things together, it shows a team that's nervous to not fulfill the legacy that they are, especially when they have Soto for 1 year now, too. They have, like, this extremely high payroll. There's a lot. I'm not saying they think about it constantly. There's also been a lot of calls for jobs, and Boone's contract is up, and, like, you know, they're trying to woo Soto back. And there's just so many things, exterior things, that are around this team that would be tremendously helped by them winning. And I think they feel that a little bit, at the very least. And, you know, like, Rizzo's probably gone. Like, there's just a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot that plays into what's going on with them. I hope it's not going to really mess with them, but I will say Cleveland gets to kind of play free. I mean, this is like, if you're a Guardians fan, and there's probably, like, Jose Ramirez has been around on this team long enough that he's probably been knocked out by the Yanks at least two or three times, because we always seem to do that to them. I feel like they are giving off the vibe that they all feel like they have to win. Like, and it's, you know, and I feel like it's only manifesting positively in Sten, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like,
no,
everybody else is playing nervous.
I totally understand that. I do think that kind of thing is in Aaron Judge's head. Like, I mean, he obviously, you know, he knows that he hasn't won a World Series. He knows that is hanging over his reputation right now in his, like, age 32 season, is it?
Yes, yeah, 32.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, he knows the situation that the Yankees are in, what the window is. I mean, they're the Yankees, so it's pretty difficult to see, like, the window closing completely while they have him on the team. But, like, he's never going to be better than he is right now. Like, you know, he's putting up his, like, Barry Bonds seasons right now. Like, this is MVP Judge. This is his peak. So, like, it's ultimately about how he handles those things being in his head. That kind of thing was in LeBron's head in, like, 2012. I've never seen that athlete get clowned on more for not having a championship than LeBron did from, like, 2011 to 2012. And then, yeah, he goes in and dominates Kevin Durant and the Thunder, and they win in five games. And it's like, it's ultimately, like, he didn't play poorly because that kind of thing was in his head. Like, he used it as motivation to go out and prove that he was the most complete player in the game. And, like, obviously it's different when you can only go up there one out of every nine at bats, and teams have the potential to intentionally walk you. So it's like, you know, there's a limit on how much.
It just means you have to make the most of your opportunities when you
exactly.
get them, which is something that he has not done very well so far in the playoffs. And I mean, you know, that homer yesterday, yeah, but he has looked lost otherwise. It's the only explanation to why he just shuts down mentally in the playoffs. But you're right. Like, yes, it's a part of being this iconic as an athlete.
Like I said, I think that Cleveland has a better chance than some people are expecting right now. I mean, like, there's certainly the underdog narrative surrounding them. Like, and I'm totally okay with that. Like, I like that the Yankees are the favorites basically, like, in every series. Like, I think part of embracing the Yankee mentality, like, is being okay with that and, like, playing the heel if necessary, and, like, seeing these scrappy teams putting up a series of their lives and having to say nope and just stomp it out and go to the World Series, because that's what you do when you're the tank that the New York Yankees are expected to be. And they haven't been able to do that. Like I said, you know, they've been playing games where it's, like, been very stressful to watch. Like, you never really felt like they were in command, like they were in control of the game. If they're going to win the World Series, they're going to have to get better at the little things. Like, they're going to have to be able to hit with runners in scoring position. They're going to have to stop making stupid outs on the bases.
They are so bad on the bases.
Yeah, and it could cost them their season. It could absolutely cost them their season. Like, if they were better on the bases even last night, like, maybe that game isn't tied. Like, maybe John Kenzie Noel's home run makes it 6-5. Who knows? I mean, hypotheticals, but
maybe, like, he doesn't even hit one because,
yeah,
you know, whatever. It could be a mental thing that the game's out of reach and they just can't do it. Like, you know, there's a lot that goes into baseball beyond just, like, the actual statistical numbers. But yeah, go on.
Two outs on the bases in game two, and out on the base in game three. Trevino, immediately after driving in the only run they had until the eighth inning, like, gets picked off on, like, a play where, frankly, I don't know where he thought he was going. Like, he's not going to steal a base. Really preventable mistakes that have been made over and over by teams that have ended up losing. And the fact that I feel like the energy of the games has felt so similar to series that past teams have ended up losing is the thing that is making fans feel like, oh no, here we go again, time is a flat circle, like that kind of thing. Like, ultimately, it is going to be up to the offense tonight to get on Gavin Williams early.
And breaking news.
Okay.
Edwin Diaz is coming into this Mets game in the top of the eighth with a 5-run lead.
That's stupid.
That's stupid. Eighth inning, 5-run lead. I don't understand it at all.
Wow, I don't know why they would do that.
Yep, that's why I just rang the alert sounder, by the way.
Baffling managerial choices on pitching usage in both sides in this National League Championship Series, I think. I mean, really, that's what it's going to come down to and where I want to leave it off to just going into this game, which is about to start this game four, is that it's going to come down to the Yankees to get on Gavin Williams early and really make it known that any like talk of momentum being shifted Cleveland's way is nonsense and that the Yankees are still in control of this series. They're going to play like they would have if they were up 3-0 and they get a few runs early and really show them who's boss. Like the big hit that they haven't been able to get, that's going to be the key for them. And if they're not able to do it, Cleveland wins one or both of these games, you know, it's a much different story than we thought it was going to be in the bottom of the ninth inning last night with two outs. And that's just seems like how it's been for a long time here. There is one thing that I have to say about certain underdog narratives that are being made, though, and it's not something that involves any players or coaches at all. This is inspired by a John Heyman tweet who said essentially that the Guardians are playing as the representative for all of the small market teams who are now going up against the top three payrolls in baseball, being the Mets, Yankees, and Dodgers. And I think that that's just such a dishonest narrative because it implies that these teams' owners can't match or come anywhere close to the salaries that are being given out by these big market teams. Like, do you know who owns the Cleveland Guardians? The Dolan family. Like, the same people who own the Knicks. Like, these aren't people who are starved for cash. Like, it's just because they play in Cleveland doesn't mean they can't sign free agents. Like, that's what the owners
are. They're even a small market.
No.
Is not like tiny, like they do well. Like,
I mean, listen, this is the kind of thing that the worst owners in the game want you to believe so that they can continue running low payrolls and make you think that it's Major League Baseball's fault and fault these big market teams for spending money on players and getting better and trying to win as if that's like somehow a bad thing. Like, there's an argument to be made that there should be a salary cap. That's fine. There should be a salary floor as well to prevent this kind of thing from happening. If you see
you
that,
don't think John Fisher can that narrative goes away. More than $65 million.
You don't think he can pay a player more than Eric Chavez, who they paid before he even bought the team in 2004 and is still the largest contract in franchise history?
There you go.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
The second you see any meaningful change in how the economics of baseball work and how exploitative owners are able to take advantage of the rules to pay players as little as possible, to give the best athletes in the sport as few options as they have and force them into accepting less money than they deserve. Ultimately, that is, I think, the number one thing that slows the progress of the game. So by making the point that Cleveland is somehow representing all of these teams just because the other teams that have won have the highest payrolls in baseball, I think is just really feeding into their narratives and ultimately is wrongheaded to the point where when the argument is made by a guy like John Heyman, who has millions of followers, is one of the top baseball reporters in the country, like it alters gullible fans' perception of how the game works and how the financials of baseball work. You know, it's the Moneyball thing again, where it's like they act like Oakland were these underdogs who can't afford to pay anybody, but they don't even begin to interrogate who the owners are of this team and why they aren't willing to make the financial commitments required to run a winning baseball team. Because ultimately that is what it comes down to. Like, that is the be-all end-all of how a team wins, is like the people running the show have to care. This isn't to say that Cleveland hasn't been paying players. I mean, they kind of haven't been, but like, you know, they've extended some of their guys. Like, they haven't been as bad as some of these other teams. Like, there's a large gap between a team like that and what you're seeing in Pittsburgh. I don't know why anyone who's watched a decade of losing baseball in one of those cities is going to look at the Cleveland Guardians, the American League Championship Series, and say, I feel represented by that. Like, I think those fans just want to see the best baseball game that they can.
But who looks at a team and is like, well, that team mirrors my team's economic situation, so I'm going to root for them. Like, that's just such a weird thing to look at it. Like, that's such a weird framing. Don't you just think if you're rooting for Cleveland, it's probably because you hate the Yankees? Or, like, if you're rooting for the Dodgers, it's because you can't stand New York or something? Like, I mean, or you can't stand Ohtani, so you're going to root for the Mets? Like, there's a lot of reasons to root for a team in the playoffs, and I feel like the last thing that any reasonable human is going to root based on is, like, finance. That doesn't make any sense.
When you spend as much time as John Heyman does talking to owners, you forget what regular people talk about and care about. And that's how you get a tweet like that, where you tie yourself into knots to try to make some underdog narrative just because half the teams in the league are exploiting the rules to make it so that they have to pay as little money as possible while raking in money from ticket sales and revenue sharing and et cetera, you know? They want you to think that it isn't profitable to run a Major League Baseball team, but it is. Because if it wasn't, they would prove it by showing their financials and saying, this is why we can't pay players.
They also wouldn't do it if it wasn't profitable.
Exactly. They would not own teams if it wasn't profitable.
Maybe if you're in Detroit, like, you're going to think like, okay, these are our Great Lakes brethren. But like, does anybody give a shit? I don't think that you look at it that way. I feel like if you have an AL Central team, which is like who maybe this would be applying to, you know, if you're a fan of an AL Central team, rooting for the Yankees, just because it's, I don't think that you want to see Cleveland do well. I also think you probably tap out. Like, a lot of baseball is regional. It's odd. That's all. It's a weird framing for how other teams should be looking at these playoffs. But I also think that this, in the last few years, this playoffs has been one of the more star-studded that we've gotten, and I feel like it's probably going to get people tapping in more than usual. The Mets story is fantastic. The Dodgers are the Dodgers with all their stars, and maybe you're picking a team, but I think if you're watching at this point also, you're just kind of riding it out to see what happens because it's interesting and you're a baseball fan or a sports fan or just like a fan of good storylines. Like, it's, you know, there's good stuff cooking here.
Yeah, like, most of the people who are rooting for Cleveland right now are mostly rooting against the Yankees or are just rooting for Team X, like being the team who isn't typically within the final four who are able to make it. Like, a lot of people just want to see that team win because you might not see them there again for a while. Not sure that right. completely applies to Cleveland, who are pretty consistently in the playoffs, but they're not the Yankees. So you're going to see right. people rooting for them to make it to the World Series over the Yankees because people who are not Yankees fans do not want to see the Yankees win. It's just how the sport works.
Same goes for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And the Mets, arguably, are the most likable team because they've had this crazy story and they're entertaining and they have all these ridiculous, you know, kooky things going on. They have the highest payroll in the sport. So, like, you know, and they're also a New York team, but they're the most likable. So, like, it's all just, I don't understand, like, you know, weaving these narratives. Just root who you want to root for. Forget about the money at this point in the season. Like, we can complain about it in the offseason. When teams don't pay people in free agency. Right now, just enjoy what's going on.
Ultimately, it comes down to this. It's not your money. Speaking yeah, of money, that I did want to mention before we like wrapped up here, just I want to get your thoughts. World Series tickets right now, like if you look at Yankee Stadium, like I don't know what Progressive Field would look like. Like the cheapest ones right now are going for $1,000. And that pisses me off. That makes me so mad.
People used to go to World Series games in like the 70s for like $25.
The fact that you have people who have gone to the stadium all season to support the team who can't go to the game now because they don't have $1,000. And so, of course,
nobody does.
All of the people in the stands are going to be these corporate banker assholes who get the tickets for free from their partner in the law firm or whatever the hell. It's just going to be like these suits and the boxes and people like millionaires in the stands. And like, I don't know, that sucks. That's not what I watch baseball for. Like, why is the common man being completely priced out of this game? Like, I understand that World Series tickets are going to be significantly more expensive than like a regular game, but
1978 World Series, Yankees, Dodgers, $17.
Yeah. Yep. It's just a shame. I don't have much more to say beyond it. It's just they've gotten so unbelievably greedy with these ticket prices that I don't know how they even sell out the stadium, frankly, when they're selling tickets for that much. But
I mean, these Mets tickets tonight, this stadium is going absolutely crazy.
Yeah, well,
completely packed. I don't know how much it was, but I bet it wasn't cheap to get in there. And
$400 or $500.
This is New York, and it's going to be in LA. There are a lot of people with a lot of money. Maybe if this was in a different city, it wouldn't necessarily be the same as crazy expensive or as full. But it's going to be packed when it's here, I can tell you that much.
We can just hope that one day memorable occasions are attainable for the common man as well. I guess that's
the dream, isn't it?
But I guess that's wishful thinking. Just a few more things I want to touch on before we get out of here today. Tropicana Field destroyed in the hurricane. Where do the Rays play in 2025? I mean, do they go to Oakland? Did they go back to Montreal? Did they go to Buffalo? Yeah, I mean,
Buffalo's a good one. I would guess Dunedin, but they maybe George Steinbrenner Field down in the Yankees system in Tampa. Montreal is a fun one. That's a good one. Buffalo is interesting because we just did that. Like, there's options. I can't see a world where they're not playing in Florida. I also, though, see a world where, you know, Major League Baseball is like, hey, now we gotta find you guys a stadium, like a good one, because we have the A's playing in a AAA stadium. We don't want the Rays also playing in a AAA stadium. If you have two major league teams playing in minor league ballparks in the same league, that is a really bad look for baseball. One of them is for stupid reasons. The other one is because of hurricane damage. Still, not ideal.
Wherever the Rays go, they have
a new deal to build a new one.
Thank God, we may have
seen the end of Tropicana. So
yeah, I'd love that.
It's a shame. We hope everyone down in Tampa is doing well, but also goodbye to Tropicana Field.
Yeah, if we never watch another game there, I will not miss it. Lastly, we might have a couple of teams sold in the American League Central. The Twins, the Pollard family, the owners for the past four decades, the Minnesota Twins, are apparently exploring a sale of the team. And then just the other day, Jerry Reinsdorf, one of truly the worst owners in baseball, announced that he's considering selling the Chicago White Sox. Whether this is just a ploy to get $2 billion in taxpayer money from the people of Chicago remains to be seen. It's obviously a big if as to whether either of these teams is actually sold. The fact that they're both going up for sale around the same time, teams in pretty similar areas, you know, I think that that's particularly interesting. Do you have any thoughts on this? Anyone in particular that you think should buy the team?
The White Sox stuff is crazy because he came out and said that he wants to not increase payroll this offseason. There's also, I heard somewhere, I don't remember where I heard it, but there was, this is a little hearsay, but it was Michael Kay. It came from the Michael Kay show. He said that Jerry Reinsdorf has said in the past that the second that he dies, he's told his son to sell the team. Like, the second that he's dead, sell the team. Because he just wants it to be like his legacy, I guess. Probably just wants to get out and take the money or something, but he doesn't want to sell it himself. So now if he's going back on that, look, the team set the record for the most losses in the history of the MLB. That's not a good way to go out if you're going to sell it. Maybe wait another season and maybe throw a little extra money at the team this offseason. And then when they win it 70 games, maybe, then you sell the team. Like, I don't understand why you would do it now. That's like, I don't know. I'm not a financial wizard, but I know that you don't sell at your lowest point. And this is definitely the lowest possible point. So maybe just wait on that a little bit. And the Twins is interesting because they already spend a lot of money. So I don't know if it's, you know, if you're a Twins fan, call in. I'd be curious how you feel because they already do spend money, but they just, you know, they just never seem to get it right. And right now they have a very good collection of talent. They have good pitching. They sure to have a bullpen. I don't know how you feel about Cole Sands, you know, and Yoan Duran had a rough one. Like, they have a lot of offensive talent. They have some big contracts. They do pay their guys. It would be interesting to see if a new owner came in, if they'd spend more or less. So I don't know how you'd feel if you're a Twins fan. I'd be curious.
I just hope that we can reach the point where the, like, venture capitalist billionaire class of owner who's only in it to make a buck. I hope that the bad publicity that John Fisher's gotten over the past few years and, like, the fact that other owners seem to be, probably hasn't, but, like, if you're outside the game, like, you're not actively, like, a part of it already, like, maybe we can get to the point where there's enough pressure, at least from the public, because it's not coming from the commissioner's office,
right,
on the owners like that, where those people go in one of the 300 other routes they can go to make money by making people's lives actively worse.
That would be nice, but I don't think they care about what regular people think about them, which is why you have, you know, John Fisher doing what John Fisher's doing.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of wishful thinking from me on this episode. That's okay.
We also kind of strayed a little bit. The World Series starts in 3 days. We're talking about John Fisher.
No, it's okay.
It's
it's
good conversation.
Good to get our tabs from around the league, even, you know, while the biggest stuff in the game is happening.
Exactly.
But is there anything else from this week? Do you have anything before we get out of here?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty much it. I'm looking forward to the World Series. I think no matter what happens, it's going to be a really good one. I'm looking forward to the World Series. I am hopeful. I'm not yet terrified. I will be if the Yankees lose this game. So you in the future know whether or not I'm feeling good or not. And yeah, man, I think we should just be happy that we're getting a really entertaining postseason.
What I will say just about the current situation right in this very moment is ultimately if the Yankees are able to win one of these games in Cleveland, I'll feel pretty good about needing one of two at home in Yankee Stadium. The fact that
I do feel bad that we haven't given Cleveland, talked about them in the way that we're talking about the other three teams on the left. And I don't think that's just our Yankee bias, assuming that we'll get through them. They are a decent team. They're very good in the regular season. You know how I always predict them to do well. The playoffs are different. I don't know if they just don't look like they belong on the same plane most times. It took everything for them to beat the Yankees last night in a ridiculous walk-off fashion, and the Yankees don't have to try that hard to beat them, as we saw in games 1 and 2. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're screwed. You know, they could totally throw it everything that they've got at them for 3 games and move on, but it's hard to do that for that long. You can't keep the pedal down all the way for that long and stay even keeled and win. So, you know, I don't know.
I think that's going to do it for us this week. When we come back to you next time, hopefully we will know what happens in these series, what the World Series matchup will be. Looking forward to see how all of this wraps up. If you haven't heard already or signed up for the Mudville Patreon, free to sign up. You will get updates anytime we put out any kind of content at all, whether it being an episode from the main feed. Tony and I have a Mudville at the Movies episode coming up pretty soon, as well as, yeah, I'm going to try to be doing some off-season rankings.
Hop in there on that with you.
That'd be great. We've got some written content coming up as well on
Patreon.
We're
also in the middle of putting our entire back catalog on YouTube, so if you want to go revisit some old episodes, go check it out over there.
Absolutely. If you want to go reminisce about the past, or just go ahead and subscribe to give us a little support. Yeah,
just at Mudville Pod on
Mudville
YouTube.
Pod on YouTube and patreon.com/Mudville, all totally free if you want it to be. Thank you for listening this week. I have been one of your hosts, Nolan Rabine.
I have been your other host, Brody Staub.
And we will see you guys next week.